Kurt Vonnegut's eldest daughter, Edith, was cleaning out her mother's attic when she stumbled upon a dusty old box. Inside, she discovered an unexpected treasure, more than 200 love letters written by Kurt Vonnegut to his wife, Jane, spanning the early years of their relationship. The letters begin in 1941, full of the humor and wit that we have come to associate with Kurt Vonnegut. The letters also reveal little-known private corners of his mind. There is a new book collecting the letters. It is called Love, Kurt, The Vonnegut Love Letters, 1941 to 1945. It is edited by Edith Vonnegut, who joins us on the roundtable this morning. Edith, thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much. This has been 10 years in the making, and it's quite a stunning thing that happened to me.
So,
you want to hear how I found the letters?
Absolutely. So give us a sense of how this happened. So my understanding is that you don't know that these letters exist. You're going through the attic, and you find them.
In the attic, my mother just kept everything, every little canceled check, every Christmas card. And because my husband and I had bought the house just one day in December, there was a leak in the roof, and I just thought, this is a fire hazard. There's just too much paper up here. So I started going through it and through it and through it. But I was careful to go through it. At one point, I thought, oh, I'm just going to just chuck the whole lot into the dumpster. But then I'm more careful than that. I love to go to yard sales, and I'm always digging and digging, but not expecting really. I mean, I was interested in the Sears and Roebuck catalogs. I thought those were fascinating. And then on the bottom, I found this squished little department store box with yellow tape, and I opened it, and I sat on the floor, and right away I recognized my father's handwriting and about 200 letters. I didn't know how many, but right then and there, on the floor, I opened a few and read them, and it was just astounding to me that these were letters my father wrote when he was 19 years old to my mother, and they were beautiful letters. I mean, he was already there. I could see that right away. He had the wit. He would say things like, I feel like I'm writing you too many love letters, and you may feel like you're drowning in fruit salad, and things like that. You know, he had it. So then I brought the box back to the barn and looked at them all and put them in order. And I found them 10 years ago, but I was determined to get them published with facsimiles of the letters because they're beautiful. His handwriting is so exquisite. He doodles, he makes cartoons, he plays with a typewriter. And it took me a long time to find a publisher who said, yes, we will do the facsimiles. I didn't want them transcribed because it's like the difference between seeing a picture of a bowl of soup and getting a bowl of soup. I mean, when you really see the letters, you can eat them. You can taste these letters.
Yeah.
So that's why it took so long. But I'm so happy it came about.
Well, it's beautiful to see the penmanship, to see how they are presented to your mother from your father. It's also fascinating just to see the way they must have looked when you found them, of the how they've aged and what they looked like as you started to go through them.
Yes, I mean, it made me go on a treasure hunt history. I mean, I never knew so much about my parents and exactly where they were. I mean, I knew she was at Swarthmore and she was a Phi Beta Kappa and he was at Cornell. But all these details in the letters, it truly was like time traveling for me. I just immersed myself in them because I love these two teenagers so much. And, you know, I'm 70 years old now. So it was just an odd, wonderful place to be, and the both of them were so beautiful and on a quest together to leave the world a better place. I mean, all that, they had the highest goals in their lives, and it's very clear in the letters too that they were in it together, totally equal. She identified him as a writer. He kept saying, no, I don't think you're correct about that, Jane. I'm sorry, I'm really not very bright. And she said, I think you're going to be as good as Chekhov. So the combination of seeing that was fantastic.
So give us a sense of the chronology, because as you say, teenagers, they're both very young at this point. Your father's 19?
He's 19. He was born in 1922. So he's 19. It's 1941. He has been in Cornell already for a year. My mother, Jane, had been at Swarthmore for a year, and they met at a mixer function, and just hit it off and were inseparable until they both had to go back to college. And that's where this intense correspondence started. And see, from his side of it, the weight she carried in his life.
It's fascinating to me because your mother is often, the letters are addressed to Jane, but they are also addressed to Woofy.
That was her nickname in college. And I don't know why. I used to ask her why. Of course, now I'm very fond of it. That's my mother. And she was beloved, and beloved people always have nicknames. And it does sound a little, could have been a better nickname. And I don't know. I still don't know. I remember asking her why, and she just sort of sighed and, you know, went on to the next topic. But it was like one of those names. Everyone had names like Trixie and Fifi and Woofy. Yeah. It was in that school.
Yeah, my mother was Cubby. I never knew. I always loved it, but I never knew how it came to be. Odd. But
yeah.
So, but I found it interesting just in your explanation. This was not a name that he gave her.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think, because everyone in her. In her yearbook at Swarthmore, you know, her classmates say, "Dear Woofy." So it was across the board her nickname, not from him.
He writes, "If I ever do write anything of length, good or bad, it will be written with you in mind." Well, besides just being beautiful and lovely, was that essentially true?
It was absolutely true. And all you have to do is read these letters where he says, "I had no idea what I hate to paraphrase because each one is like a poem," where he pretty much says he didn't know where life is going for him. And she helped him figure out he wanted to be alive, and he knew what he wanted to do now. I mean, I could read you one of the letters.
Please
where
do.
He really just, you want me to?
Absolutely.
Okay. He says, "You're the angel that used to come to me in my dreams, though I didn't know it was you. What I am is pretty obvious, but the wealth of the loveliness that you've shown to me is as subtle as the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And that's why I'm afraid. In the roaring, foaming, seething fury of loving you so much, I've promised and vowed to build air castles and beaten my chest and torn my hair, telling what you and I would accomplish. I get sick with fear that I'm a bluff, that I'm actually no damn good, that what I've sworn to do is impossible for a person like myself. I don't know. I have no way of knowing. I don't want to let you and your fantastic hopes down with a thump. I don't want those fantastic hopes to take the place of love. I don't want successes to become the consummation of that love, because failures will be the death of it. I want love to exist for itself alone, separate and perfect and adequate, no matter what. Because it's on love's account that I'm glad I'm alive. It's on love's account that I'm willing to see life through from start to finish. Up until the time we were married, I was sorry to be alive. And after seeing air raid shelter after air raid shelter filled with dead humans, that's where I ended that one. I don't have another picture.
Yeah, that's okay.
You get the picture, right?
Yeah. It is, I mean, those letters are so stunning that first of all, your dad, what a charmer, huh?
And what a writer. He was.
Oh, I mean, the writing is gorgeous. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, he was
Did you ever get a sense from, you didn't know the letters existed, but did you ever get a sense from your mother of how she, responded to, to that kind of affection?
No, this was news to me completely. I didn't know the letters existed. They were up in the attic, and there had been decade after decade of real life happening to them that it, you know, I don't know if she remembered them. I'm sure she did, but she was not the type of person to go around claiming credit for herself.
Yeah.
You know, she was like, she was a, from the Middle West. The Indianapolis people have a great sense of modesty. And she had that too, just a dignified, you don't show off, you don't brag, you don't claim credit. She had that in spades. So all I knew was that she was my mother, and plus my father's sister and her husband died pretty much together within a day of two of each other. And so all of a sudden we were went from a family of three children to seven children. And my mother, you know, had to make cake and everything. And, you know, it's just she had to go full on into to get these kids, her nephews, through the grieving process and raise her own three kids. Everyone just loved her. She's radiant. And also, I just thought, oh, she smells really good. And she makes really good mashed potatoes. That's all I know.
But you...
And all my friends love her.
But once you read the letters, I assume you are not surprised by the love that your father has for your mother. It's not that that comes as a shock to you.
No, I knew that. Yeah, I knew it was an amazing meant to be love affair. I knew that. But I don't know how I knew that because I never saw one of these letters until 10 years ago.
Well, no, but the way that they would respond and talk to each other as you were growing up, you get a sense of of their love for each other.
Yes, and their mutual respect for each other's brains was really a beautiful thing to see. He would even then show it to her and hope she laughed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was beautiful to see. The sort of mutual respect for all the arts. They were completely in agreement on a love for music, literature, fine art. They just wanted to make a life of great literature and good music. And they, at one point, they wanted to open like a book bar where they could drink and talk about books. And they actually did that on Cape Cod. They had a great books club all over Cape Cod, and many of their best friends were part of that. So, yeah, I saw that compatibility.
When you look at the these letters and their beauty, did you ever receive a letter from your father? Did he write to you as well? Was he a frequent letter writer in general?
You know, that's so interesting because, yes, he would write and write and write. And it's he would write fan letters to fans. Mm-hmm. You know, he would be the only one who would respond to correspondence. He liked to go to the post office. He liked to conceive in letters. And so, yeah, I got a ton of them. But I lived right in New York City with him, so I didn't get as many letters as my sister and my brother did. But I got enough, and it was always, some of it wasn't so great. You know, he would sort of criticize my art and, you know, when is it going to be about something? You should paint about something. You know, he was hard on me.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, he was extremely gentle and loving. But, you know, he could be harsh. And I found one letter that was, oh, my God, it probably just devastated me at the time. I don't even remember getting it. Pretty much saying you just need to put more content into your work. So that was useful.
And how did he feel about his own work? Because he was quite critical of his own work, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. And he would grade his own work. I read Sirens of Titan when I was 13, and I loved that book so much. And my second favorite was Cat's Cradle. And, you know, Slaughterhouse-Five, I know that's what made put him on the map. But for me, those two were my favorite. And he would say his flagships of his body of work was Cat's Cradle, Sirens of Titan, and Slaughterhouse-Five. Those were his flagships. And, yeah, he was very harsh. Sometimes he graded, you know, a play or a book with a D. And he'd give himself a D for it. Mm-hmm. He was, yeah.
I remember I interviewed your father shortly before he passed, and he he said to me that he felt that he was that he had scruffy credentials, that he never won a major literary prize, and but what he was proud of was that all of his books were still in print.
Yes, they are, but he did win a Guggenheim. That's not nothing.
No, not at all. No, not at all. Yeah, but I guess a Pulitzer or a National Book Prize or Booker or one of those. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, he did feel scruffy because, you know, he didn't have the education. And in his letters to Jane, he said, "You're the one with the sterling education." He did not feel like he was very bright. You know, he says it in the letters, which I find adorable that he would, because he's, he, you know, to me, he's one of the smartest people I've ever known in my entire life. He would have facts and figures and science and grammar. You know, he had it all, but he didn't have the diploma. You know, he was studying science at Cornell, and he was ill-suited for that and flunking out and on probation, academic probation. So, yeah, he always felt, I think that probably made him always feel a little insecure.
One of the things that my favorite memories of talking to your dad was we were on the phone for a very long period of time, and we were doing the interview, and he was very giving, and it was just lovely. It was really very, yeah, very special. And at the end, there was a story at the time of Anna Nicole Smith, who was a model, and she had married a very rich man, elderly man who died, and then he gave her all her money, and then she became pregnant and nobody knew who the father was, and there was a great question as to who that was, who the dad was, and so I got off the phone with him, and praising him, of course, and saying thank you and just what an honor it was. I got off the phone with him about 10 minutes later. He calls me on my cell phone and he says, "Donahue, Vonnegut." And I said, "Hello, how are you?" And he said, I just want to say something I didn't say in the interview that I want to tell you, but I am the father of Anna Nicole Smith's baby.
You know, that is so priceless. He always had that edge of just hilariousness. I mean, even, you know, in his darkest things, he could just make you howl with laughter. It's so funny. And I have great memories of things he would say to us and come out of his radio studio with little projects for us. But they were all just sort of pretty nutty. But that's funny. I love that story. Thank you.
Is it difficult to mourn? I mean, I've lost both my parents. They lived to ripe old ages, and I feel blessed for that. But is it different mourning with others in the sense of mourning an icon?
Well, it does feel like the whole world belongs. He belongs to the whole world. And we can't claim him because he's the whole, he belongs to everybody. And I get that. But it's not, I mean, I'm really touched when people are reading this book of letters and they call me up crying. And I think, well, he wasn't your father. He wasn't your mother. Why are you crying?
No, but they're so beautiful. That can't surprise you. I mean, the letters are so gorgeous that they are tear-inducing.
Yes, and I feel so lucky. And I think any person, human being, would like to see their parents at that time when they were 19, 20, 21 years old, taking form and the spirit they had. And I was actually thinking, you know, I've been asked, you said, what do you think Kurt would think of these being published? And my first response, I would hope he would like them. And I know Jane would like them, because she pretty much liked everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he would have at first said, oh, my God, you know, who is this person? And in the end, just get a kick out of this human being who he used to be. I think he would appreciate that. And I do think he'd be very proud at how literate he was as a teenager.
And you mentioned this early on, but and he became more known for it as toward the end of his life. But his art is really incredible.
His art, he was always doodling. We have books that, you know, you're not supposed to write in a book, but his every book, he's got, and they're not just circles, and he does people and tanks and soldiers and women and little songs and little ditties. You can see his mind working with the drawings. And when he was writing here, he would always have a project going. He was making a birdhouse, or he was etching something in a piece of marble, and or painting the door of his study. So he was always, always busy. But the book doodles are superb, and I have about 20 of them.
You
or any librarian would yell at him for.
Yeah. this seems a good place to end our conversation, in the sense that I kept on reading the book wondering, the question I had was, well, did she ever respond? Did she ever write back? And toward the end of the book, you say that in all my searching, I found only one letter from my mother to my father during this time.
But I think there were many, not as many as he wrote, because he complained about that. For every six of his letters, I think she got one. I mean, she wrote one. Because she was busy. She was a scholar. She couldn't just sit around and write love letters. So, but I think, you know, he had them, and he lost them in a bus station or something. You know, he had them in his pocket. But from the letters, you can see that she did write beautiful letters back. And I'm still hunting for them, but I don't think I'll find any.
And that says a lot about what your father kept versus what your mother kept.
Exactly. My mother kept everything. I thank God for her for keeping them, and I thank him for writing them to begin with.
The name of the book is Love, Kurt, The Vonnegut Love Letters, 1941 to 1945. The book is edited by Edith Vonnegut. What a great pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for spending the time with us.
And you too. Thank you so much. I'm just delighted that you got to speak to my dear old dad and have that story. Thank you so much.
Well, one of the great highlights. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Love, Kurt, The Vonnegut Love Letters, 1941 to 1945, edited by Edith Vonnegut, the book published by Random House. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.